rather sad.
Can I ask you a bit about...
that's the story of my life.
No, it's not. The beginning. Your war experience, I mean, did you join up at the beginning of the war?
Yeah, I was a conscript in 39.
Right.
Got to be 39, yeah. But I had a deferment because I worked at the refinery for a couple of months, and so I was called up in the November. I think it was the beginning of November, end of October, I can't remember. I could have, I looked at the book. But I was called to the medical RAMC. Yeah, there are reasons for that. Yeah, but I won't go into those. That could be a conflict to some people. Not that I worry about other people, but it's not a good thing to have in relation. If we're dealing with D-Day and war and killing, we might as well stick to the... But I was a medic all the war, yeah. I went to with the BEF to France and beginning of 40. Like everybody else came out, you know.
Can I go back a stage?
Yeah.
You said you went to the refinery. That's the Agri refinery.
Yeah, the old Agri that was.
Right. Could you tell me what your job was with the refinery?
Well, initially there, I was a sampler. You all started at 18.
So was I.
Yeah, a sampler, yeah.
But when it was Esso...
Yeah.
That's why I asked you, you see.
Yeah.
I went to work for Esso
in
1957 or thereabouts.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
As a sampler up in the lab at the top site.
Yeah. You're in the top site, yeah. I was down on the reruns, I was. Well, I acted as a sampler for the reruns and the crude plant, because those are adjacent plants, the reruns and the crude plant. Well, the reruns and the crude were joint plants, and then there was a cracker down the road. Well, the reruns took the material from the cracker, the old cracker, the old steam cracker, as they called it. And the residue, the crude ran natural crude, which I worked on that as well. They were adjacent, you know, the crude and the rerun. But the crude plant refined the natural crude coming in off the tankers, but with various types, you know, had Venezuelan, you know, this, that, from various areas. But then the reruns, we ran the stuff that the cracker had, you know, the residue from the crude plant went to the cracking plant and was at very high temperatures, and with an activator put in, produced very high temperatures and cracked the materials left so that you produced more naphtha. You could get more naphtha from, you know, petroleum products out of what would have been residual sludge, I suppose, if you like, or oil. Yeah. And but I was a sampler, but then the war came along and I spent 5 years, I suppose, like everybody else. But I was invalided out, after 5 1/4 years anyway. And but I didn't return there because I thought for a year, you know, like everybody else, I've not had 5 years ever since. I thought I'm going to enjoy myself fishing and playing around, which I did. And I was single, you know, so I played around for a year. But then I decided I could have gone back to the refinery, but they paid us all the war, or they made our military money up to what would be now civilian money, which was quite good, wasn't it, really? But I came out with a pension, and I decided, no, I wouldn't go back to shipwork, because it was all shipwork, you know. And I thought, do I need that? I've had 5 years of military-type shipwork, because I did work in hospitals, latterly. And, or I suppose the bulk of the war, my war, I worked in hospitals. Although I went to France for the BEF, and I did go to North Africa for a short visit, but didn't do all I should. I was on a ship that was torpedoed, so I got back to the UK and I never went abroad again. But, well, I had, everything was lost, you know. And I suppose I was very lucky that I spent most of the war, or a lot of the war, in military hospitals, nursing, which was good, really, because, you know, I did just about everything, resuscitation. I did psychiatric nursing as well. And so, really, I enjoyed my war experience, despite the fact of dealing with mutilated bodies and minds, was an interesting time, you know, as opposed to those who were in a conflict either in tanks or planes. I mean, in York, for instance, we dealt with all the major airfields, Driffield, there were three of them up there in Yorkshire and Lincolnshire, and all the people coming back, you know, the wounded crew, or even on crash and landing coming back, we burnt people. We had them all in York military, all the major work. We had a huge resuscitation ward there, which I was one of the crew on call. Wherever you were in the hospital, we had a tannoy system then. We didn't have bleepers then. And it would be resuscitation squad, please, you know. And you'd go along to resus, say whoever on the ward, you'd say, I'm off to resus. So we had electric blankets, we had saline drips, we had everything prior to, in many cases, operations, you know, where I can think of bloke now where the kite, although he was injured over Dortmund or somewhere, he had a cannon shell in there which hadn't exploded. It's a 20 millimeter cannon shell. You imagine it'd kill most people. My brother was killed so in a post there. But anyway, this cannon shell was there and I operated. He brought in a resus, but didn't only have a cannon shell there. He was burned, but not badly. But this femur had gone up into his thoracic cavity, chest. It fractured two ribs, punctured one lung, honestly, and he had a radius and ulna here, and a tib and fib here, I think, you know, on me. But this femur, that tib and fib, you know, that's two bones there. But this femur come right through and gone through his lungs and broken two ribs. But that man walked out of there 3 months later. How's that? It went to Wharncliffe Neurological Centre. But I was the dirty ORA, that or dirty nurse, you know, it was operating room assistant, you know, because you went with your patient from resus to the operating theatre, and I was dirty nurse, and I can remember with the Spencer Wells holding this cannon shell in them. It's like a pair of, I got a pair of there actually, like a pair of tweezers, but big, you know, with a handle, like scissor handle, and holding it, and this surgeon, I can remember him saying, oh, that bloody thing doesn't go off, Speddy, don't you? I said, yeah, well, we'd all be gone. And honestly, I had to take it next door. We had an RSC unit which dealt with all military equipment, and we had a hole in the wall that anything we had, like a patient would have a revolver, you see, come in, especially pilots, and you took that and any ammunition straight through that. But we put a hole, knocked a hole in the wall, so we didn't have to go all the way around. And somebody would get on the blower and say, oh, somebody's coming with. So in this case, somebody rang through and said, oh, we're sending somebody over with a cannon shell. Unexploded 20mm cannon shell. And I can remember handling it through to this bloke, and he took his forage cap off and put it, and I put it gently in his hat and ducked down. I thought, you know, bloody, I can remember that, honestly. But I often think about the things that you do and things. But that lad in 3 months walked out of York Military Hospital with his girlfriend, or fiance, I think she was, and she was going with him on the train to Wharncliffe Neurological Centre, which is near Oxford somewhere. But I often thought, he was okay, he was fine. But, you know, due to brain damage, you had to go, because he did have slight dysfunction, only speech mainly. But he was fine, he was alert, sharp, but you have to believe that. After all those injuries, I mean, Christ, he was a lucky soul. Jesus, but I can remember going down with that bloody 20mm. You know, if this goes off, I'm dead. You know, during the operation, everybody was scared to bloody death, thinking, you know, and this, what the surgeon had to do first, you know, was clean it back, or, you know, one of the cleaner, well, I can think of it now, a nice guy, cleaned it, you know, the area, and truly, you know, and shave the hair back quick. And this surgeon cut the flesh like that, or star cut, and opened it back, and then he had to, where it was jammed into the skull, you know, it had entered the skull and he had to sort of get away and try and hook his head. He was being ever so gentle, you know. And I was there, and I said, let me ease it a bit. He said, you watch your step. And I'm just easing it. I said, it's okay, it's coming, because I could feel this, you see. That it, you know, I was getting, I mean, the chap was out cold. But bloody hell spells when you think about it. I thought, Jesus Christ, everybody breathed a sigh of relief once he was out, you know. Get out of it, you know, get it, boy.
How did the men themselves respond to, I mean, before they're injured, they're in a terrible, tense situation because they're in combat.
Well, up in an